afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. I know there was a little bit of delay there. We seem to be having technical difficulties today, and we'll see how this show goes, but I'm thinking it's going to be a great day. Maybe it's just time to open the window a little bit more and let some cool, fresh air in. Not sure about that, but here we are. Today, we are going to be talking about health and medical insurance and young adults and even for older adults. Medical and healthcare these days, oh my goodness, I almost want to feel like it's such a quandary of a topic. You can go into a group of 100 people and you turn around and you say, oh my goodness, what did you think about this? And then you'll have everybody around you. Everybody wants to know about it. But then everybody has a different opinion. Everybody has a different answer, different words, different solutions. So here's the thought. When you go to your doctor, what do you think? Do you think when you walk in, you tell him you're in 10 minutes or less, your symptoms, tell them what's been going on, tell them your medical history, and then you step back and you say, okay, now what's my diagnosis? And he looks at you and he says, I think, or let's test, and then when the tests come back, he says again, I think, and when you get the I think, it's really about what he thinks with a best guess. Do you believe, or can you challenge yourself in the words of, maybe that doctor is doing the best he knows, and just maybe there are other answers, other solutions, and other things that are going on with you that may or may not be uncovered. Wow, what a big difference. You know, so many people, they really kind of hold their hat on that, oh, that's it, that's the nail in the head that's going to cure me, I'm going to be good, I'm saved. Not always the same thing or really the truth. So today my guest is Erin Havel, and her book is called The Malformation of Healthcare, Illness, Insurance, and a Young American's Struggle for Care. Let me tell you, this is the best topic ever because you know what? Everyone has a story. Everyone can say something in their family. They've been touched by this. So today we're going to be just talking about Erin's story. And I'll be sharing a lot of stories that I have from over 40 years in the healthcare profession. So, Erin, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to be with us. And, you know, this little electronics glitch today, we'll see how it goes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, thank you. And don't you believe that everybody, you know, you can go in almost anywhere and everybody has a story, a solution, or a remedy for everything in healthcare?
That was the most interesting thing about writing the book was as soon as it got published, everybody came out of the woodwork, and all of a sudden I was getting phone calls from people saying, oh, I know exactly what that was like. My mother went through that, or my grandmother went through that, or I'm actually dealing with that with my brother right now, and do you have any suggestions? Who should I call? Who do I talk to? You know, it's amazing how difficult our healthcare system is, and I'm sad that it's like that. I wish it wasn't so difficult.
You know, I think healthcare in the word itself, people think that it's just healthcare is when something hurts or something's broken, fix me. And we always think, you know, we can go a little further into hospice and things when, okay, you can't fix me now. I still need you to save me. I'm still holding on. You know, and it's really this paradigm of they bring you into this world, but then they also aren't doing so great at the end or in the middle.
Right.
And so many people are saying, well, isn't that what healthcare is? And I think we should probably eventually over this hour define what you think healthcare is and what I think healthcare is, because that's not what I think healthcare is or should be. And maybe that's where right now with the new, you know, insurance issues and everything, people are really getting stuck. What are you expecting of your healthcare? You know, what are you calling healthcare? That's not what I call healthcare, and that's the differences. So how do we get what we need to feel better going through these type systems? So can you tell us a little bit about your story? I know it started when you were very young.
Yeah, I was actually born with a vascular malformation, and only 1% of the population has this. So it's very rare, and a lot of doctors don't know anything about it. What it is when the fetus is developing in the womb, extra blood vessels come to the body in order to have it, you know, fully complete within the gestational period. And for those 1% of the population, the extra blood vessels decide, oh, our job's not done, and so they continue to work after the baby is born. So it creates this spaghetti-like tanglement of blood vessels in the body, and they continue to grow with the body over time. For me, I had an external malformation that, you know, doctors could see,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a purple-red bubbled mass. I mean, it looked like a Victorian shoe is the way I describe it in the book, because it did. It looked like a shoe. And it would bleed. I would, you know, go to school, and if my shirt rubbed up against something or hit something, then I would just bleed. And so the doctors felt they needed to do something about it. They ended up taking me in for surgery, and they decided to cut off the top layer of this malformation without really understanding that there was also an internal component to it that they didn't know about. And, you know, it was probably 1983. I mean, it was a long time ago, and medicine wasn't where it was at with, you know, MRI machines and, you know, even CAT scans. They weren't as developed. Yeah, so they went ahead and they cut into it. But what they didn't realize was that when they did that, each of those blood vessels that they cut into and didn't realize they cut into them grew like 6 heads. So the malformation went from this tangled mass of spaghetti to an even bigger tangled mess of spaghetti. And, you know, I didn't think much about it for most of my childhood after that. I just had this scar that people would see and, you know, comment on, you know, in the changing room and such. But when I got into middle school, I'm sure it was with hormonal changes. I really think that there's a big hormonal component to this malformation that I have specifically, because it all of a sudden swelled up really big, and it was very scary. And, you know, the doctors pulled us into a room, and I had to take all these tests. And, you know, they said, well, we don't really know what it is. She could die. She might not be able to have children. I mean, the laundry list of scary, 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 you know, was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was frightening. And then I graduated from grade school and moved into high school, and I just knew I had to watch it. And that messes with a kid's mind, I got to tell you, you know, not really knowing what's going on with you. So I just did the best I could to watch it, but I didn't really know what to watch for, because the doctors didn't know what to watch for. And so I would swell, and then I would shrink, and then I would swell, and then I would shrink. And it was disturbing, but I got used to it. And then I got into college and, you know, went through all that, and that was fine. And then I started dating somebody who was a fourth-year medical student. And I had been complaining about my back bothering me. Now, when the malformation was first discovered, it was on my abdomen and a little bit around to my right side. It hadn't, you know, extended into my back or anything. But I was having these jabbing pains really, really bad. And the person I was dating was like, you know, you should really get that checked out. And so, of course, I'm like, sure, all right, I'll go have a test or whatever. And I go to the doctor, and they did an MRI, because now that was more readily available. And they discovered this huge mass that was now not just in the abdominal area and around my side, but also into my back muscles and corrupting them. And that's what was causing the pain. So we went ahead, and he had one suggestion of a doctor at Northwestern in Chicago that I could go see. I was living in Chicago at the time, so that was very convenient. And I went to that doctor, and he said, oh, this is very large. He's like, we can start, you know, treatment. I think it's going to be this, that, and the other. He talked very fast, and I was kind of confused as to what he was talking about. I didn't know anything at the time. I was just kind of grasping it. What was that he said? What does he mean? How does that work? And then we said we were moving, and he said, well, then I really think you should see Dr. Wayne Yakes in Colorado. He is the man that has developed this treatment for these vascular malformations. For the type I had, it was called ethanol embolization. So they injected ethanol directly into each of the vessels in that malformation in order to kill it off. So I went to go see Dr. Yakes, and he's a very nice man. He had developed the treatment because his friend, I guess, had a vascular malformation, and he was about to lose his military career if it wasn't fixed. They were going to take his leg because they didn't know how to treat it, And he had had this treatment working on for something else. And he was like, well, maybe I can apply what I'm learning here to this other situation. And it seemed to work. So I went in there, and he said that according to my MRIs, that my vascular malformation was the second largest he treated ever. So I felt special. And, yeah, and he went ahead and started treatment, and it was every month. I would have back-to-back treatments twice a month, and then that went on from 2004 to 2010. It was a lot of work.
You know, it's really incredible to be able to think that a long time ago, I mean, I've been in healthcare since the 70s, and to even remember that things like MRIs, CAT scans, a lot of these dye tests weren't even around or weren't that great then. And when they were, you kind of had to go to a certain hospital, and you had to really make sure that you had someone who knew what they were doing. They were just really learning themselves at that time how to read these type tests. So
exactly.
When you say like something in the 80s, don't forget, you know, in the 80s and the early 90s, we were still dealing with what did you learn in school? You learned it by book. You learned it by if I happened to read that certain book, if your doctor happened to read that book. You know, if someone put out a book, even it could be just across the country, you may not have read that book to be able to know that answer. So we always expect the doctors to, quote, know everything. And I think the time of the internet is really what blossomed in healthcare, because now if somebody did something in Germany, you would know about it tomorrow if it was in your field.
Right.
You know, and that has really propelled healthcare forward. So you're saying, you know, in the 80s and stuff, people really did not know. That really was the way it was, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And I'm very grateful for the internet, because I do find that there's a lot that I can look up now. I mean, I had no idea that essentially what I have is the same thing as like a brain aneurysm that people pass away from all the time, except that mine was not in my brain, thank God. You know, but how would I have known that? How would anybody have known that prior to being able to do some research on the internet?
But also, too, on the internet, you know, it takes away a lot of the medical of, you kind of can say the symptoms I'm having today are the symptoms tomorrow, and it really does help, because you can find these rare conditions. You can also find support groups, but you can also find other people that could say, I had that too, but did you have this? Or I had that too, and, you know, what am I missing? I mean, you know, when you go to your doctor, like you said, you know, sometimes you think that they've got four eyes and antennas sticking out their nose because you cannot understand. You're just supposed to sit there and listen. So that's, I think, where we were saying I was saying at the beginning, talking about healthcare and how it's progressing so rapidly, because you really need to sit there and pay attention. But if you can catch a few words and be your own advocate, you can learn more about it going forward and make some decisions too. And, you know, a long time ago, we could not do that in the 70s and 80s. It was called, you go in, you have 5 minutes, tell me what's wrong. I'm already writing out your prescription, see you later. And it's not at all like that now. Or it shouldn't be.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Right. No, being your best advocate is paramount, I think, whenever you're diagnosed with anything, because you have to know what you're talking about, especially like when you work with insurance companies who, you're right, what you said earlier, we were talking earlier, and you were talking about how some of these folks are, you know, put into jobs where, okay, if A plus B equals C, then we'll cover it, and if it doesn't, then we won't. And a lot of people did not understand what, like, a vascular malformation was, because I hardly knew what it was. I mean, that's a scary position to be in. And so when the insurance company stopped paying my doctor and then kicked him out of his network, I mean, they were very serious about not wanting to cover these treatments, because they are expensive and they are so rare. They were trying to find any way not to cover them. And yeah, I had to be my own best advocate. I had to say, look, here's what it is, and here's all of the information I have, and here's all the information my doctor has, and here's what's happening, and here's what won't happen if I don't have these treatments. And it was a tough, tough time.
And I think as you went through it too, you know, when people think when you call an insurance company that you're actually getting someone that's compassionate, can listen to your story and make a decision and push a button, and that answer is 100,000% incorrect. That is not the way insurance companies work.
Right.
It's really, you know, it's certain things have to be done. People punch in, punch out, and do what they're supposed to. I mean, have you ever gone, you know, when on a website and it says, enter this, and then it'll say next, and then enter this, and it'll say next. Well, when you get to that next, and it says, no, I'm not taking it, that's where some insurance claims get stuck. I you know, of my many decades in insurance work, yeah, we've always said, you know, if you cannot get past that next icon, there's something that you didn't do right on that page. And if it's looking for payment on the next page, you're not going to get it. So that's where claims get stuck.
Yeah.
And to be aware of that and not, I mean, I understand everybody does take it personal because it is their life that many times is hanging in the balance, but you have to just keep doing it every single day. Hire somebody to do it. To be, you know, to sit there and call and call and call and call and call, you know. And, you know, have a family member that just can consistently keep doing that for you because it is a process to be able to get coverage. And I know you've had throughout your book, you know, not only was you getting your diagnosis and the treatments that you needed, but also insurance coverage. That was your two challenges, right?
Yeah, well, I had always had health insurance. I mean, that was one of those things because I had this rare condition. Like, I never had a lapse in coverage. I was always covered very well. Every job I had good health insurance. The problem was that when the health insurance didn't cover, what was odd here, I should probably go back a little bit, was that the insurance company had my doctor on their list of people that they covered, and they started covering my treatments, and they covered them for about a year and a half. But the problem was that, unfortunately, my AVM was so large, it was going to take much longer than a year and a half to treat the whole thing. So it was kind of like, here, let me do part of your surgery, but not all of your surgery. And so they were looking for ways to get out of covering what they were required to cover. And the way that they did that was by completely stopping payments to my doctor for treatments that I had already received, and then ultimately booting him out of their network. So then they had to treat him like he was an out-of-network doctor. And to see all of this, it's just all bureaucracy to me. I mean, I feel like really,
right.
You know, if you say you're going to cover someone for something that they need, then honor that. Don't play games with it. But it's all down to money, and these were expensive treatments. And so they... yeah, they booted him out of network, and then they had to come up with a new formulary or some way to, you know, charge for his services. And so it was not just my case. He had to do this for every single state that my insurance company, the head of the insurance company, was a part of. And so it was a big class action type of thing. It wasn't just me that was going through this at the time. But every single state that had people that were dealing with a similar situation with this doctor had to work through.
You know, and what people don't understand is that a lot of doctors can get kind of sometimes when they submit their claims, what happens is those claims go into what we call yellow box, caution box. And sometimes when they're in that caution box, it takes a little bit longer or it's a little bit harder to be able to get things through. So for people just to understand this, and also if a particular doctor is doing a lot of very expensive and a lot of very difficult procedures, the insurance company, that's like, then you're kind of like in a red box, we would call it. And that's really important for people to know is that it's just what it is, and just keep fighting and keep going on it because that's what you'll have to do. And a lot of times when you have really expensive treatments, you can reach your lifetime max. And once you reach your lifetime max, you got a bigger problem than just trying to fight for the, you know, finishing up your treatments. And that's also very important.
Sure. I think wasn't with the Affordable Care Act, isn't that one of the things that they were doing away with was the lifetime maximum out of pocket? that was one of the things.
Yeah, and unfortunately, some of them say that, and some of them, there are going to be caps. You are not going to be able to just get everything and anything up till the day you die. There is going to be a lifetime max. And that is a problem for a lot of people because they say, oh, goodness, then what do I do? You know, and we can even look at it in the situation of hospice care where they're giving you 6 months, and a lot of doctors are saying, you know, I don't know when that six-month point is. I can't give you that. And then people are in hospice, and then at the end of 6 months, they're asked to leave because their benefits ran out. And then how would you like to be in that situation? You know, and we always say, oh, no one will be kicked to the curb or no one will be let go without therapy or treatment or help. And in this day and age, I don't think you can blame, I guess it's kind of like an all-around, I wouldn't even use the word blame. I think it would be responsibility because the doctors are doing the work. They need to get paid. But then the doctors also, when they get paid, use that money to be able to be and pay the dues to be in the hospital, to be able to, you know, pay for the people that are in their office. So people always think doctors are so getting rich, and it's so untrue.
Right.
That we really have to understand, you know, economics 101. You know, you pay the doctor goes to your store and buys your food, he goes to your restaurant, he goes to your dry cleaners, whatever. And that's the way economics works, is that everything goes all the way around. And in healthcare, when we're faced with these decisions, it's like, oh, you just feel that incredible, intense need. You need to be taken care of at all costs. You need to have everything done. And when you see other people getting things around you, it's kind of very hard to just focus on yourself and say, I will be okay, I'll take care of myself, I'll get what I need, when really you see it otherwise, you know?
Sure.
And that's, I think, so hard for a lot of people these days, especially when their insurance is, they are having it or not having it, or it's supposed to cover and it doesn't cover. And I'm sure all those times you were like, how many times have you taken the phone? Okay, now you might not say it on the air, but I've had this happen. I'll say mine. With my husband, they didn't cover something. And, well, you know, when you hang up from the insurance company and you're banging the phone on the floor, you know, and you're going, you're not listening, and you're banging the phone on the floor. Everybody does that. Everybody seems to think, oh, I can't do that. You know, I have to be good. I have to this. Bang that thing on the floor and hang up and dial again because you'll get somebody else the next time.
Absolutely. And you never know who you're going to get that's actually going to know something or be a little bit more helpful than the last guy. I will never forget having to go through all the, after the insurance stopped paying my doctor and was like, well, you know, you can go to a different doctor that's in network. And then they sent me to all these vascular surgeons, none of which knew anything about an AVM. They had no clue. And so, you know, I had to go through all these extra tests, like, oh, you need another MRI at this hospital, and you need another CAT scan at this hospital, and you need to see this doctor and that doctor. I was spending so much of my money trying to, like, copay after copay after copay to doctors I knew couldn't treat me, and they knew they couldn't treat me, and that was the worst part about everything. But I had to do it. I had to jump through every single one of their hoops in order to get to a place where, you know, now I had all of these other doctors saying, look, we can't treat this. She needs to go see Dr. Yakes in Colorado. He's the guy. He's the one she needs to go see, unless you want to pay for her to go back to Chicago to see that guy, or potentially over to the East Coast to see somebody else who may be working on it or may not be. It was a very difficult time, but if you don't jump through all of the hoops and if you don't, like, call every day and you don't answer all of their questions, then that's just another way for a company to deny you. So you have to do it, and they might deny you in the end anyway, but at least you tried, at least you did your best. And I think that's the best consolation for me, is I felt like I did everything I could to be my own advocate to get to what I needed.
And I think that's so important to always remember, is to keep at it, because there are time delays. Once a claim is sent out, they have 45 days to correct it, to fix it, to do whatever, and then they may turn around and deny it. A lot of people don't know that there are, quote, time limits. You know, they think, oh, I'll get to it, I just don't feel good. Hey, yeah, that's 60 days. Oh, well, you missed your window. And so many times you have to be right there on it. 2 weeks, I say 2 weeks, you know, you've got to have somebody calling about something, you know. Oh, well, I like this one. I'm sure you've heard it. Oh, the bills aren't in yet. We'll get back to you when they're all through, right?
Sure.
And then you get to the end and it's like, oh, well, you're past your window. We can't resubmit. And it's like, are you seriously kidding me? You know? And these things happen, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's very funny because then it was even after I was done with all of the treatments too. They got me to a point in 2010 where he's like, okay, you're stable. Your AVM is in a stable place. And he monitors me every year with MRIs to, you know, check on the spot that, you know, he didn't quite get to. But everything at least is stable. My back muscles aren't being as corrupted as they were, thank goodness. But even after that was all done, I was still getting letters in the mail of like, well, we might be denying this, or you need to pay this because we've canceled. And I'm like, wait a second, that's from 2008, and it's 2012. Mm-hmm. Why is this 4 years later? What's going on? One time it was a major error, I guess, I don't know if it was the hospital. I'm not really sure anymore. But somebody had placed my insurance with my primary and my secondary reversed. And so the secondary insurance had covered everything, and then the primary insurance had only covered the portion that the secondary didn't cover. And because it had been reversed, they were coming back to me saying, well, we screwed up, so now you have to cover it. And I was like, hold on, wait a second. What do you mean? You guys screwed up, and now I have to cover it. Oh, I was on the phone for days for that one, days.
Yeah, and you really have to continue to do it because they will come back at you. There have been instances where they may pay something, and maybe a year or two later the hospital or the doctor may get audited, and then they will ask for that money back. And if you don't give them the money back, they have the option to then cancel you. And we would like to think in this world that that's not true. This thing will never happen to me. There's got to be some kind of legal this, that, or the other. But I'm just saying, these things happen. You know, every day these things happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's infuriating and it's exhausting. And you're right when you were saying earlier, you know, maybe appoint a family member or somebody to help you. That's so important. Because you do. I mean, if you're under treatment or if you're feeling ill, I mean, most likely your senses are down. Everything is down. You're exhausted, and it's very hard to fight for yourself, fight your own body, and then also fight, you know, these companies that are so much larger than you. And ultimately, what are you going to do? If one person takes a big company to court, you know, most likely they're going to lose. And I would be out personally, my life savings, and they would be out a few pennies in the grand scheme of things, you know? It's very hard when you're the little guy going up against the big guy.
It is. And it's just the idea of really to be conscious and aware. I think what my most important thing with clients is that I said, when you're walking out of that office, you get a slip. Get a slip of paper, you were there. Get a slip of paper, what they did or they didn't do. And if they say, oh, it's in the computer, you know, you don't need anything, see you later, blah, blah, blah. Are you kidding? Never leave anywhere without a piece of paper. Never, 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 never. And I don't know how many times we could say never, because they will say, oh, well, we didn't do that on that date. Oh, well, we did something else on that date, and then you can come back. You've got the paper. You know you were there that day. You knew what they did that day, and you knew why they did it, because there'd be a diagnosis code there. And that is so – that is like your golden ticket. So just to everybody, all the listeners, please make sure that you get a piece of paper on your way out.
Yeah, just write down everything that they did. And anyone you talk to, the names, full names, you know, first name, last name, this is who I spoke to on this day, this is what happened, this is what was said.
Yeah.
You know, the notes are going to be your best ally in the end.
Yeah, and even so, you know, you do the best you can, it'll still come down in the end, you can get whatever help you can. So let's go on, we're halfway through the show, but then you started and you got sick again.
Yeah, well, when they finally, I ended up, the insurance company finally offered to pay, I think it was like 80% of what they were supposed to pay, but at least it was something, you know. They said that they would cover 80% of my treatment or 80% of what they were supposed to pay in that part of the treatment. Anyway, and I got to my doctor's appointment, and it had been 9 months of battling with them when I finally got there. And they took my pre-treatment blood work, because basically all of these treatments were surgeries, and they would do anesthesia and everything. So they did the pre-treatment blood work, and they found that my white cell count was 177,000. So a white blood cell count is supposed to be between 4,000 and 10,000, and that was a real big red flag that something was wrong. The physician's assistant at the time, you know, she was like, whoa, we can't do a treatment today. And, you know, after 9 months of fighting with, you know, insurance to please have these treatments if I need them, you know, to hear I wasn't going to have the treatment, that was devastating. But then it was very scary because I'm like, well, why? And they're like, well, we're going to admit you to the hospital and you're going to have a bone marrow biopsy. She's like, I think it's leukemia. And I mean, at the time I had just turned 30. I was like, are you kidding me? This isn't how like 30-year-old's life is supposed to be. This isn't how a 20-year-old's life, like, what is this? This is like stuff you deal with when you're much, much older. What am I dealing with this now? Right. And I kind of wonder, I do. I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, do I think that the treatments are what spurred on the CML, the chronic leukemia, or do I think it was the stress? And honestly, I think that the stress has a lot to do with it, because I've noticed even now when I have my blood work taken for the leukemia, I have it taken every 3 months, and if I'm under tremendous stress, my numbers don't look as good. They just don't. So I think that we all have these cells in our body that are, you know, just waiting for something to trigger them to turn them on. And I think that maybe those months of fighting really, really did it for me. So anyway, I was diagnosed with leukemia, and I was quote-unquote lucky because it was the quote-unquote good kind, if there is a good kind. Right. I would have chronic leukemia for the rest of my life, but this miracle drug had come out only a few years earlier, actually, and it's targeted therapy. It's targeted chemotherapy. So you take this daily chemotherapy drug, and it like turns off the making of more of these white blood cell counts that are not, sorry, misspoke, chemo brain, flip it around. it turns off the BCR-ABL gene. So what happens is with chronic myelogenous leukemia, the ninth chromosome and the 22nd chromosome split from each other, and they reconnect to one another instead, creating this, what they call the Philadelphia chromosome. And that's what makes you end up with this specific kind of leukemia. So what the drug does is it kind of turns that off, turns that part off. And as long as it works, as long as there's no, you know, tolerance built up to this medication, then you can live a long life. You're going to have side effects. You know, they don't really talk that much about those because they're like, look, you're living. Right. And this used to be a cancer that killed people, like, instantly kind of thing.
Yep.
And that's great, but side effects are pretty rough. And the medication is $8,000 a month. It started off when I first was diagnosed as $3,000 a month. And then through the years, it just crept up. And now we're at the year, I think it's next year, that this drug will finally be allowed to go generic. So all of a sudden it went from this $3,000 to $5,000 to now $8,000 a month. It is very expensive, and it's another one of those things that a lot of insurance companies do not like to cover. So they'll say, oh, well, we'll give you 1 month, but then you have to have all this extra testing to see if you really need this drug. Well, yes, I really need this drug. Like, this is what's saving my life.
Right.
It's difficult. But, yeah, so that's kind of the next step of where I ended up, and really a big reason why I ended up with this book in the end, because I went from battling insurance company and going, well, it's a rare condition. You know, of course I'm going to end up battling with insurance because they don't understand this rare condition, to a not as rare condition, cancer, that here's another way that they would like to deny coverage, that according to every, you know, pamphlet, every book, every, you know, part of my policy should be covered. So it's been an eye-opening experience for me, but that's where I'm at. Still taking the medicine and doing well.
And as we've said in the beginning, is that everybody is an individual. And what happens is when you put down the code for a diagnosis or a treatment, those things have to align, just like we said before. If you're putting in a template, the numbers for the diagnosis, the numbers for the treatment, and the number for any of the testing or anything, you can't hit the next button to have it go to the next page to enter more information. See, there's times that you may have a great doctor that's doing a novel therapy or treatment, and it just is not in their formulary to be able to fit into that code there to be able to hit next. And so many people think it is so personal, and it is not personal. It is a formulary. It is, just like you would say, if I turn the handle on my faucet, water comes out. It just is what it is. If you put it on the stove and you turn the stove on, the stove gets hot. If you leave it on long enough, it boils. That's what I try to relate to people about insurance, is that's the process. And when you have these other outliers, like you say, you go every few months for blood work and stuff. Well, your insurance may say, we only think that twice a year is enough. And your doctor says, no, I want it four times a year because you have a co-health concern, a co-health issue. That means two issues. So when you have two issues, he wants it every 3 months. They will say A plus B didn't equal C, so we don't see it. And that is really an issue a lot of people are having. Even with cancer, you may have breast cancer, but all of a sudden now you have a sinus infection, and maybe you might have a sprained wrist or something. Insurance cannot comprehend all of that. They see, input, everything fits, hit the button next. If we can go to the next page, we're good. If we can't, we got a problem. And that is so important.
I think it's not just insurance that has that issue, though, too. As far as even, friends and family members and coworkers, and, there's a lot of problems where it comes to, well, cancer, clearly all you do is you go through these treatments and you live or you die. I mean, it's very cut and dried. I saw it on TV once, so therefore this is how it must be. And for someone like me, it's chronic. Yep. I will have this cancer for the rest of my life. It's maintained and controlled, thanks to this medication, but it's still there. It's not just gone miraculously. And so that's very confusing for people too, is what are chronic conditions like? What does that mean? How does that work? And I think that that's a struggle for, especially with insurance, paying $8,000 for one chemotherapy treatment, sounds horrible, but doing it every month for the remainder of someone's life, well, that's pricey. Right. It's very pricey.
And we also look at, too, as we get back to the beginning of our conversations, defining what is healthcare. And healthcare is the same thing. When a doctor is trained in school, you're trained for when you see this, here's the test you're supposed to do. You submit them here. That other testing person will say yay or nay. And that's your diagnosis. And then here are your lists of treatments. And it's very much the same as insurance is. You put these codes in, these things come out, and that's where you go. And when a doctor deviates, it's really a problem. And, so a lot of people, they get misdiagnosed. They misdiagnose this altogether for sometimes decades on people. Sometimes people say to me, my goodness, I was just at my doctor 6 months ago, and now you're telling me I have stage 4 cancer? What is wrong? Must be my doctor. Really? But right. A doctor cannot scan you every 6 months from top to bottom with every single test for every single reason, for every single condition that we know to man right now, and say, okay, 100%, I'm sure you're good to go. You walk outside, you get hit by a truck, well, I guess you're not good to go. The point is that no one can control our fate. No one can control our life. It just is what it is. We're just experiencing it as we go, and how important that is. All when you come to that conclusion, we're just on an experience in life, and you can work through them, and you'll get to the next spot. and not think that it has to be 100% perfect because so-and-so said or because I did or because it's supposed to be, then you'll be able to work through your life and just be able to go on and have a good life. I mean, I'm sure you couldn't sit down and say, oh, my God, I got cancer. I'm going to sit in bed all week long, you know, and I just turned 30 till I'm 100. I don't think so.
Right, right. Yeah, I think it's important, too, to be aware of your own body as well, though. I mean, you know, there's a difference between being a hypochondriac, but also recognizing when, wow, something is really not right here. And then going in and being very specific when you talk to your doctor about what that problem is. My mom likes to tell the story about my grandmother going in and, you know, the doctor would be like, well, how are you today, Miss Havel? And she would be like, oh, I'm great. You know, everything's well. You know, because she was talking to the doctor as if it was a friendly conversation, not a, well, actually, you know, my memory's going and I burned myself on the stove. And, I mean, the actual reason why she was there, she was just caught up in the, oh, we're having friendly chit-chat. And so I think it's, you know, important to write it down, too, because I don't know about anybody else, but I personally have, like, major amnesia when I get into the doctor's office. I can be like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm really feeling, like, heart palpitations, and I was dizzy the other morning. And I'll get into the doctor's office, and they'll be like, so what's going on? I'll be like, I don't know. I'm not feeling really well. Like, I can't, for some reason, verbalize. I'm dizzy, and I'm having heart palpitations. And those are the important things the doctor needs to hear. So it's interesting to me how we deal with other people.
And we forget, too, when we sit down and talk to the doctor and it's, oh, how are you, blah, blah, blah. And the elderly are the best ones at this. They'll tell them all about their kids and everything. But the clock is ticking. You've now taken up 10 minutes of valuable time that you needed to talk about why you were there in the first place. You know, then when you get to the end and it's like, wait, you didn't hear, or you didn't understand me. Well, you kind of took up his time, and you need to know that every moment you walk in there, hey, I'm not here to socialize, boom, 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 you know, get your point across.
Yeah, write it all down. That's my best advice.
And I always say, you know, granted, I have this great little dementia, you know, I'll be 60, and I kind of like think, I would laugh, I say, oh, I really don't need to remember what's for breakfast. And the doctor would say, do you think you're getting dementia? I'm like, no, I just don't think it's important to remember what I had for breakfast, you know? So there's times when you have to let some of these paranoid, like you said, hypochondriac stuff go. It does not matter what I had for breakfast, you know? Or your kids will come over and they'll say, oh, my goodness, don't you ever dust? And I'll say, yeah, I just don't do it with my reading glasses on. So if I can't see it, it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? So there's things there that you really need to say. Make light of some things, make importance of others, you know? But if my kids came over and they saw my house like that, they'd say, okay, Ma, we need to go get your eyes checked. And I'd be, oh, okay, and we'd go. You know, because then we would know maybe your house needs to be a little bit cleaner. Everybody, don't laugh. Everybody can attest to this. You'll remember this when you're 60. You never clean your house with your reading glasses on. Never, 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 never. But,
I'll keep
you know,
it in
when
mind.
You. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes people go to the doctor and they've got a checklist of 1,000 things, and it's like, you know, let's focus on, if you sat down right here and you said, oh, my goodness, my back hurts. It's not that, oh, my goodness, you know, yesterday my eyes were a little twingy and my finger was real cold. And did you know my knee looks really weird? You got to leave some of those extra things off, you know.
Right.
You have
and
to
see,
really focus in and know what's going on with yourself.
Yeah, and don't drop things, though, that could be connected to something else. I mean, if you're having neuropathy, you know, talk about having neuropathy along with your heart problem. You know what I mean? Don't drop that one. But, you know, if you have a hangnail, you can probably let that one go.
But, you know, sometimes you'll get so many that they aren't focused on what's, you know, really most important, you know. Is your heart pain number 10 on your list? Because I have it every day. Then that's a problem, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you got dizzy and it was only like once a month, it's something to mention, but it's not something to say I have to have a drug for it today either, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, you focused a lot, and your book is about young adults, and, you know, that you're younger. And I think that's important for young adults to do notice is that when you I think many of the kids, well, sorry, I'll call you a kid. Many of the kids these days, they really were brought up by parents that were really doing a lot of things for them, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, parents were still home in the days of the 70s and 80s. You know, parents were around then, and, you know, they would have dinner, and they would take them to the doctor, and your mother would always speak for you when you got to the doctor. You'd just sit there. And when you get to be older and a young adult, it's kind of like, well, I've never really done this before. I really don't know what's important or what's not important. And I really don't know how to deal with these insurances or whatever. I can attest to this because I've got 4 young adults right now from 22 to 32. And they're like, can you come go to the doctor with me? Because, you know, I don't know what to tell them. It's like, not happening, you know. Or I don't know. I just got my health insurance. What do I put on it? And I'll offer my information, but really learning about the processes yourself is what's going to propel you forward. Because for every ding you get, you learn how to be able to get through and get on to the next one. Because if somebody is always solving all of your problems for you with the insurance company or the doctor, you will never know how to create that for yourself. Take care of it. I'm sure
yeah,
if somebody
it's definitely
just,
a real shock.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking if somebody had taken over your bills, you know, right in the beginning, you know, and did that for you, and then when it came down to, oh, well, you don't have coverage anymore, and then throw them at you and say, see you later, you'd be like, what are you kidding? Oh, my God. See, so
yeah.
I think you going through that was very important for you because you learned how you had to fight for your life to be able to do that. You learned that your life was important and that having these therapies and treatments was important and you were going to get it. You know, rather than sit
really
down and just walk away, you know, don't you think?
Yeah, it's been really eye-opening. I mean, I've talked to a lot of young adults, and I went to a conference a couple of years ago, and I was talking to a few different young adults, and they're like, wow, I didn't even know that could happen, that insurance could just stop paying your doctor.
Yeah.
And there's so much that they didn't know, and all of a sudden I did know that actually they were coming to me asking me questions when problems would arise, and I felt good that I was able to answer them for them. I just wish I didn't have to go through the difficulty to understand it the way I do. But with young adults, it's really hard because you really are. You're on your parents' insurance for a significant amount of time, and then all of a sudden you're
right.
just off of it, and you're like, you've got your new job. And, you know, the benefit package that you get when you get your first job, you know, you're like, wow, I've got a benefits package. Cool. Am I ever going to use my 401k? I don't know. Just take a couple dollars out and I'll see what it means later. You know, you're not really thinking about what it means. You're not really looking at what your benefits are for your health insurance. You're not, you know, unless you need it. And then all of a sudden when you need it, you're like, uh-oh, I don't know if that's covered. I don't know how that works. And you get thrown under the bus and you're disoriented and you don't know why. So it's important to kind of have a heads up early on. You know, even with, like, understanding Medicare or Medicaid, you know, a lot of young adults are like, well, whatever, that's for, like, old people or, you know, whatever, people that are struggling.
Right.
I don't need that. I'm fine. No, understand it. Care about it because you might need it. You never know.
That's right.
I think that's been something I've opened my eyes to throughout this whole process. The thing about young adults, when a major disease pops up, though, is, you know, a lot of times people, they don't understand how devastating, like, some of these conditions can be. You know, it's not like it's just, oh, okay, well, I've had the problem and now it's over. You know, even if you have a cut and cure, quote unquote, cancer, you know, you're still going to have financial struggles that you didn't think you were going to have. And having financial struggles when you're a well-established older person is one thing, because you might have a savings account that could cover some of it, or you might have a credit line that's a little bit larger and you can pay things off over time. But when you're young and you're just starting out, a $20,000 bill, oh, what is that? How am I going to, you know what I mean? It's a,
right.
it's a devastating blow, and you might be paying that off for years and years and years. And then emotionally, too, you know, it's fascinating. I've realized that I have some kind of PTSD from, like, the cancer diagnosis. Like, fighting with insurance, I did whatever I could, and I, you know, fought and fought and fought. And now it's like any kind of, you know, phone number that pops up that looks off to me, I'm like, oh, my gosh, is that the insurance company calling? You know, I have this strange PTSD thing that I never had before. And then physically, you know, all the medications and the side effects and all the things that you've gone through, it's, you know, that's not something that ends when the treatment is over. It continues on. It's going to be something that you have to live with. And older folks might be a little bit more capable of knowing themselves to be like, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this and figure it out. But I think that a lot of younger people, because they feel like they got hit by a bus when it happened, you know, because they're just so like, wait a minute, I'm just starting out my life. What do you mean this is going to happen to me? Because we're like the young invincibles. I mean, that's what everybody likes to call young adults, is the young invincibles.
Mm-hmm.
And when things like that happen, you know, it changes your perspective of yourself. It changes your perspective of what you can do. It might change your body image. It's difficult. It's very hard.
It definitely changes quality of life. And I can say for, you know, the older people too, you know, when they get those diagnoses, you know, they may not have the money at that time because a lot of people are living a lot longer these days. They didn't expect to be. And then their quality of life, and you tell me I'm going to have this big issue. And an elderly person, it was never brought up to fight the insurance companies. So it is a struggle, I think, on both ends. You know, it's just a matter of perspective at that time. And what I think is also important, too, is that when people, and I think this is going to start blowing people's minds in the next 2 to 3 years, is that, oh, well, we're going to get this coverage, and it's better coverage than ever. It's great coverage, and you just go to the doctor, blah, blah, blah. Well, sorry to say, but you're going to have these deductibles that are out the wazoo, co-payments like nobody's business, and you're going to say, well, I'm going to go in for this preventative test, except the test is covered, but the facility is not covered, or the doctor to read the test is not covered, or the second visit to go in and find out your results might not be covered. There's a lot of logistics that will start coming up, and not to scare anyone, but the point is pay attention. You know, what, just because you, quote, have an insurance plan that, hey, I pay $400 or $500, I have the best thing, I get sick, there's no problem, I'm going to go in and I'm good to go. The minute you enter anywhere, money will come out of your pocket. There is no other way to say it. It will come out. And people think that insurance policy is really a golden wallet, that it comes out of there, and that's not really the truth. And I'm sure you found that out along the way.
Yeah, I feel like it's always been like that. I mean, I don't know how it will be in the next couple of years, but it definitely has always been like that, where you've got a $5,000. I always had a $5,000 deductible before they would cover any of the treatments. And that's part of what threw me into bankruptcy court much later on, because how was I going to come up with $5,000? I was just starting out. You know, that's not an easy task. It's interesting. I actually, we recently were on our honeymoon, and I got to talk to some people from Australia. And they, you know, their opinion of everything that they see on the news, because they get, you know, the different international news stations, and they talk about, oh, health insurance in America. And they're like, I don't get it. I don't understand what is wrong with you guys there. Like, why don't you want to care for your poor, and why don't you want? And it's so hard to explain to people that it's a different way of looking at healthcare. The way that they look at it is, well, if someone is suffering, then that means I'm going to have to cover them anyway. So better to just have a across the board, everyone's covered with something, so that way I'm not having to deal with them later on when they're sicker and worse off. Whereas we're like, well, maybe they won't get sick, so then we won't have to cover them. You know, it's just a different way of looking at things. But that was fascinating, talking to someone from a different country about health insurance and universal care versus, you know, insurance companies, private care.
Yeah, and the conversation can go on forever about health care and about insurance. I think it will change day to day, and it will change person to person, because we are all such individuals, and our circumstances just happens to be who we are going to get to help diagnose us and treat us, all the way down to who's going to push that button. It'll say paid in full. And, you know, for everybody to understand that it is what it is, and do the best you can, and be sure to pay attention to yourself and get what you need. And I think that really is the focus of this whole hour, is that that's you do what you can, correct?
Absolutely.
Well, Erin, it was a pleasure to have you with us. We burned through this hour like nobody's business. And we stayed on the line. Ho, ho, ho.
Yay.
Yeah. So can you tell us, are you going to be speaking anymore, or...?
I'm working on a series of books, so I'm stepping away from the healthcare just a little bit to lighten up my life a little bit. And so I'm working on writing a new book, and I'm starting with the first one right now, and I have 6 chapters left. Come on. I'm working on it.
Oh, goodness.
But,
and what will they be about?
This is actually when the Newtown shootings happened. I know this is going to sound very serious, but when the Newtown shootings happened, everyone was asking, why is it always the children that have to die? And I was hoping to find something, write something that could be healing to people that lose children, because it's devastating. And so I came up with this idea of, well, what if a soul, before it's even born, decides that it wants to do something so incredibly huge with its divine purpose that it can't stay on Earth too long because it doesn't want to be corrupted by humanity, but it wants to be here long enough to understand that humanity does have goodness, and that's why it has to leave early. And so that's the basis of the story is this child, she doesn't live very long on Earth, but then you see throughout the rest of the book how her soul is actually divinely purposed to do something so much greater than she could have done on Earth.
And I think every one of us is here, you know, to learn a lesson, but also to share those lessons, but to also other people. It's sort of like the circle, just like we said before about economics. Everybody's here for another person to see or to view, and all those lessons pass on all the way around, but also the healing passes all the way around too. You know, you taking care of yourself, you can always speak to somebody else and say, it will be okay, this is what I did, and here's how can I help you. And, you know, and for people to reach out, I think that is the basis of my healthcare mantra all the time is that, please, you know, pay attention to the person sitting next to you. And so many people will just say, oh, my goodness, they're sick, and keep walking on. So when you get those books done, let us know, and you're welcome back on the show.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Can you tell us your website and how to purchase your book?
Sure. Well, the book is available on Amazon. So if you just go on to Amazon.com and you type in The Malformation of Healthcare or Erin Havel, H-A-V-E-L, you'll find it. It's right there. My website is www.erinhavel.com. Pretty easy. But I'm on Twitter at Erin_Havel. And Facebook, you can find Erin Havel Author if you just type it in the search bar. So feel free to follow me on any of that. You can keep up with all the new books that I'm working on and my new plans about discussing healthcare.
Well, great. Thank you so much for being with us. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. So if you'd like more information about Erin, her link is on today's show page. Please check it out there, and you may also purchase her book, The Malformation of Healthcare, Illness, Insurance, and a Young American Struggle for Care. It's available on Amazon. You may also find out more information on her website, and she promises to let us know more when her other books are coming out. So thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and if you'd like more information about how to have an advocate, how to be able to get some help and say, you know, when I'm going to these doctors, I'm getting all these diagnoses, I don't know what to do, oh my goodness, I don't feel well, I can't figure these things out, can you help me? Feel free to contact me, drjeanettegallagher.com. And thank you so much for being with us today. It's a pleasure. And until tomorrow, have a great day.